The following is a lecture at Haridas Giri Seva Shamayam Ashrama, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 1st, 2009, in Shah Alam, Malaysia.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Vala Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. So, this human form of life is the most special blessing. In the Vishnu Purana, it is described that there are 8,400,000 different species of life. Jalajalavalakshani, Stavala Lakshavingshati, Krimiyodrudrasankhyakya, Pakshinam Tashalakshinam. Trikshalakshani Pashabha Shaktur Lakshani Manasha. Beginning with 900,000 aquatics and going up through the plants, the insects, the reptiles, the birds, the beasts, and coming to the human beings, there is an aggregate total of 8,400,000 different species. 400,000 of those 8,400,000 are humankind. These 400,000 different human types of species have the great opportunity to awaken the dormant, enlightened consciousness within the heart and achieve liberation from the cycle of birth and death. So this is the whole purpose of the Vedic culture, the original Indian culture. To gain release, moksha, from this cycle of birth and death. Actually the first, according to the ancient Vedic literature, the first enlightened being in the universe was Brahmaji. He is given very nice realization of what he realized. He has expressed that in the Brahma Samhita. Actually, there are many chapters to the Brahma Samhita, and they are lost. But one of those chapters was found in South India. You may have heard the temple, Adi Keshava temple in South India. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring South India, he went to the Adi Keshava temple. And there he found the manuscript for the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. And in the first verse of that fifth chapter, Brahmaji states, Ishvara Paramaha Krishnaha Satchidananda Vingraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Which means Krishna is the supreme controller. He has an eternal form which is full of bliss and knowledge. He is the origin of all, even though he has no origin. And he is also known as Govinda. And he is the cause of all causes, the original source of all existence. So this realization of Brahmaji included realizing Krishna and seeing the whole spiritual world revealed before him. So Brahmaji, he passed on this knowledge to his disciple Narad Muni. And Narad Muni, he passed on this knowledge to his disciple Veda Vyas, the compiler of the Vedic wisdom. And Veda Vyas, he was residing in the Himalayas. And you know, actually, Veda Vyas is still there. Did you know? He is not easy to find, but actually, if one knows how to find Veda Vyas, he is still there in the Himalayas. Even to this very day, he is still present there. So, some centuries ago, Madhvacharya, he went to the Himalayas and he had the darshan of Veda Vyas. Veda Vyas passed on this knowledge to him, and he passed it on to his disciples. It came down to Madhavendrapuri. From Madhavendrapuri it came to Ishvarapuri. To Ishvarapuri that knowledge came to Krishna himself in the form of his devotee Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed this knowledge on to his disciples, the six Goswamis. And they passed the knowledge on to their disciples, such as Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, etc., Srinivasacharya. In this way, the knowledge has come down to Jagannath Das Babaji, and to Bhaktivinod Thakur, and to His Divine Grace, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and from him to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, and to him, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, my beloved Guru Maharaj. So this is called Parampara system. It has come down to me from my spiritual master. And now he has ordered that I must disseminate this knowledge to uplift the suffering souls of this world back to the spiritual existence. This system known as disiptic succession is very nicely described by Krishna. Perhaps you are knowing Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 4, text number 2. Evam parampara praptam mam rajarshayo vidu Sakalineha yogata yoganishta parantapa. This knowledge was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession. And the saintly kings understood it in that way. In course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So that is the system of disseminating Vedic knowledge. It is very carefully handed down from master to disciple, and then that disciple in turn, he becomes master, and he hands it to his disciple who becomes master, who hands it to his disciple. This is sometimes compared to the Indian system of harvesting mangoes. The mango, if it is bruised, it is not very good. If the mango is not bruised, oh, it is the king of all fruits. It is so nice fruit, you see. So, they don't just send some worker up the tree to take, pick the mango and throw them to the ground. And they'll become ruined. They station the workers up and down the tree, you see. The worker on the top, he will hand to the next worker, who hands to the next worker. And this way it comes down, very, very nice mango. So when it comes to the market, you can buy first-class mango. So in this way, you see, the mangoes are carefully handed down without being bruised. So in the same way, the Vedic knowledge, you see, it is very, very carefully handed down from guru to disciple. Each disciple means he doesn't change the message. He takes the message exactly as he has heard it, verbatim, from his Guru Maharaj, and he repeats it to his students. In this way, the knowledge comes down in its original pure form, the same way that Krishna revealed it to Brahmaji, and the same way that Krishna revealed it to Arjuna in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. What Krishna revealed to Brahmaji and what he revealed to Arjuna, it is the same knowledge, simply according to different situations. Arjuna's dilemma was fighting the battle. Brahmaji's dilemma was he had an empty universe, a dark empty universe. What to do? He didn't know who he was. He didn't know where he had come from. Actually, you may know how the universe came into being. That Krishna, according to Vedic wisdom, Krishna is the original person. And he expands himself from himself, Balaram, and from Balaram comes another expansion, another expansion, another expansion, another expansion. Until finally there is Mahavishnu. He is also known as Karanadakashai Vishnu. And that Karanadakashai Vishnu, he lies down in one corner of the spiritual world. And he goes into a sleep known as Yoga Nidra, mystic slumber. And in that sleeping, every time he exhales, thousands and millions of universes come from his mouth and from the pores of his skin. And every time he inhales, those thousands and millions and billions of universes are absorbed into him and they go into a dormant state. So, when that Mahavishnu exhales, in each one of those universes, those millions and billions of little bubbles, those universes that come out of his body, he further expands himself as Garbhadakashaya Vishnu. That Garbhadakashaya Vishnu lies down in the bottom half of the universe. Each universe, there is a Garbhadak ocean. You see, the universe is halfway filled up with water. Garbhadak ocean it's called. So he lies down on the Garbhadak ocean. And now if any of our householders here want to have a family, you see, they want to have some children, they have to take the help of their wife, isn't it? They make their wife pregnant, and this way they can have children. But Garbhadakashai Vishnu, he is so potent. He doesn't need wife, even though Lakshmi is serving him. He does not have to utilize Lakshmi to produce children. Simply from his navel grows a lotus flower, and in that lotus flower, Brahmaji is born without the help of any wife, you see. He gives birth directly from his... What man can do that here in Kuala Lumpur? He can make a lotus flower come out of his navel and produce children from his own navel. There is no man here who can do that. I don't think there is. I've never heard of such a man here in Kuala Lumpur, or anywhere on this planet, you see. But Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he can do them. He doesn't need a lady, you see, to make a lady pregnant. He can just make children from his own navel. So he makes Brahmaji. And Brahmaji is empowered to populate the universe with millions and billions of population of all the different species of life. So in this way, the universal creation takes place. But in the beginning, Brahmaji was born, and he didn't know who he was, he didn't know what his purpose of existence was. The whole universe was dark at that time, there was no sun. He didn't know what was going on, he was bewildered. What's going on here? Actually, he went crawling down the lotus stem to see what's down there. You know, he went exploring, he couldn't find anything, he crawled back up to his seat on the lotus flower. And then he heard two syllables from the Sanskrit alphabet vibrated. Ta pa. And he knew, oh, I am to do tapasya. I must meditate and do tapasya to realize the absolute truth. So he did that. And he had the vision of Krishna. He had the vision of the whole spiritual existence. So in this way, after he was enlightened, then he was able to fill up the universe with so many planets, the sun, the moon, so many species. He had so many children who produced more and more. In this way, millions and millions of world population, universal population was created. So Krishna had to enlighten him before he could perform his duty, just as Arjuna had to be enlightened before he could perform his duty. So what does that have to do with us, you may ask? It may be an interesting story, but what is the practical value for you and for me? You see? The practical value is this, that just as Arjuna and Brahmaji had their respective duties, each and every one of us has a duty. Each one of us has a duty that God wants us to fulfill. And until we actually know what is that duty, you see, we remain in confusion. We remain under the influence of Maya, the material energy. This is Arjuna was bewildered in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava. Prishchami tvang dharma samudda cheta yat shreyansya nishchitan buhitan me shishashteham shadimam tvam prapanam. He says, Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 7. He said, now I am confused about my duty. I have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, O Krishna, I am begging you to tell me clearly what is my duty, how I can please you, what is my responsibility. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So, for us to come out of the illusion of material existence, we have to do exactly the same thing that Arjuna did. We have to present ourselves to Krishna, the Supreme Person, and beg Him, my dear Lord, you please enlighten me, what is my duty? All the great personalities, they look to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme, and they surrender themselves unto Him. That's described in the Rig Veda. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sadapas Yanti Suryo Deviya Chaksha Atatam. All the gods, they look to the Supreme Vishnu or Krishna. They all look to Him for guidance. So, in this way, if we take advantage of the wisdom of all the great sages of India who are pointing us ultimately to Vishnu or Krishna, and we humbly submit ourselves to that Supreme Person for guidance, then He will be very kind to us. Actually, that Vishnu or Krishna, He is known as Chaitya Guru. He is seated in your heart. Did you know you have a Guru in your heart? Every one of us has Guru right there in our heart at every minute. Nobody is lacking a Guru. Everyone has Guru, because Chaitya Guru, that Supreme Person, the source of all existence, He is seated right there in your heart. So when one becomes very sincere to know how to surrender myself fully to that Supreme Person, you see, then that Chaitya Guru, the Guru within, He will appear externally. The Guru without, you see, the external Guru, the bona fide spiritual master, who will then teach the disciple how to fully submit to God, how to fully realize God. If there is God, then He must become visible, you see. God is not simply some vague idea, some Hindu mythology, you see. If there is actually God, then I must be able to see God. If there is actually God, then God must be totally real. If there is actually God, I must be able to see God. It's like here, do you have a king here? Malaysia has a king. If Malaysia has a king, then he must be able to see that king. And if nobody can see him, then it must be simply a myth. There is actually no king. You see? If Malaysia truly has a king, I must be able to see the king on TV or maybe in some official function. I must be able to see the king. You see. So if there is God, if there actually is God, you see, I must be able to see God. Now some people argue, well, there is God, but you can't see Him because He's formless. He has no name. He has no qualities. But let me ask you, is that logical? God means the source of all existence. So, within existence, we see there are so many persons. Just like, for example, say that I brought you every day, sir, 1 kilo of gold. 1 kilo of pure gold every day I deliver to you in the morning. And for you to keep, you see. You become very wealthy very quickly, you see. You'd be very happy every day I'm getting 1 kilo of pure gold. I can retire forever on this. And then, finally one day, you say, Sankarshan Prabhu, I can't imagine how you're getting all this gold. Where are you getting all this gold? Are you robbing the bank, or what's going on? No, I have a gold mine, you see. Oh, you have a gold mine? Well, how much gold do you have in your gold mine? I don't have any gold in my gold mine. You wouldn't believe me, would you? If I'm giving you every day 1 kilo of pure gold, and I say it's coming from my gold mine, then my gold mine must possess gold. Otherwise, how I can get gold out of it? You see? It's simple logic. So if I say that God is the source of all existence, He's the ultimate existence mine from which everything is coming. You understand? He's the fountainhead of all energies. If I say that God is the source of everything, and within everything I see there's so many persons. I'm a person, you're a person, she's a person, you see, he's a person. There's so many persons, millions and billions of persons. So if persons are coming out of that original source of all existence, then that original source must therefore possess personality. And if something possesses personality, what's the next logical conclusion? Well, it must be a person then. It's not really an it. Is it? So we can understand from Vedic evidence and from pure logic that the source of existence has personality. Now sometimes it is described arupam. without form. That's a fact. It is described that way. What does that mean, though? You will find verses in the Vedas where it says avrupam in one verse. In the next verse, it says rupam. Right, in two verses in the Svetashvatara Upanishad, in one verse it'll say without form, in the other verse it says with form. Both are true concepts. Now, how can they both be true? Both are confirmed by Vedic evidence. Now, how you can say that God has no form and God has form both at the same time? You see, should we accept one and reject the other? Is that proper approach to Vedic wisdom? No. We must accept Vedic wisdom in toto, completely. So if in one verse it says no form, and the other verse it describes his form, that means both are true. So how do you understand them to where you don't get confused? The understanding is this. When it says that God has no form, it means he has no material form like you or me. His form doesn't get sick, it doesn't get old, it's not made out of material elements. He has a form described by Brahmaji, Satchidananda Vigraha. Not made out of bone and blood and mucus and stool and urine, like our disgusting form, you see. His form is made out of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. It's quite different than mucus, bile, stool, pus, and blood, you see. So God has form, but not, we say he has no form because he doesn't have a form like our form. His form is pure, transcendental bliss. Knowledge and eternity. Those three elements. Three spiritual elements. So, God does have form. But you may say, well, but how can I see him? I have eyes. My body right now is a stool and urine, blood, pus, mucus, bone and hair, body and teeth. How could with such a body could I see God with these eyes? When his form is made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. How is it possible? Actually, it's not possible by our own power. But when God chooses to reveal himself, because he has unlimited power, he can make that form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss visible to our eyes, made out of stool and urine and pus and blood and all those disgusting elements, you see. He can do that. That is within his power. God has unlimited power. So, the Vedic wisdom, the actual purpose of accepting a spiritual master, is to take training how to qualify yourself that you can directly see God face to face. You see, that is the bona fide spiritual master. He trained the disciple how to become qualified to see God face to face, eye to eye. You see, my spiritual master, you see, he is training me like that. Now I can see God face to face, eye to eye. He ordered me. Now you just qualify yourself to see God face to face, Krishna, God face to face. So this is the real meaning of spiritual life. So how do you qualify yourself? That's the next question. Well, Brahmaji, after he saw Krishna, he was really kind. You know what he did? He told us how we could also see him. After Brahmaji had his darshan of Krishna, he left some instructions for us how we can also see him in beautiful Sanskrit poetry. And I'll give you that poetry now. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yang shamushunjaram chintyagunasvarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. What does that mean? We have any Sanskrit scholars here? Prem Anjana. Anjana means ointment. Even in English they say unguent. That's a synonym for ointment, unguent. So you can see that how English is actually derived from Sanskrit, anjana ungment. So that ointment, what type of ointment? Prem anjana, the ointment of love of God. Prem anjana. One has to anoint one's eyes with the salve of love of God. That is the method. You have to find that very special ointment. You have to anoint your eyes with that ointment. And then your eye, your vision will become purified. Actually, God is already there in front of us. That's a fit. But right now our eyes are out of focus. I see some of you wearing glasses tonight. You see. Without your glasses, it's hard to see things because they're out of focus. You see. Right now, spiritually speaking, all of us are out of focus. We all need spiritual glasses, you see. That Prem Anjana is like spiritual glasses. That Prem Anjana brings our spiritual eyes into focus, because God is actually present there before us right now, but we cannot see Him because our eyes are out of focus. But by this Prem Anjana, then your eyes come back into their perfect, pure state where you can see God. So how is that ointment applied? And where do you get that ointment? That's the next question. That ointment is very unusual ointment. Usually we get some ointment for the eye, you know, we take that little tube, we squeeze it here, you know, kind of blink our eyes and spread it around. You see. But this ointment, it's applied through the ears. This is a very unusual ointment. You take it in through the ears, into your heart, and from your heart then it goes to your eyes. This is a very, very special type of ointment. So where do you get it? That's the next question. I'm ready to sit and take it through my ears, into my heart, and to my eyes. But where do I get this ointment? That you will find coming from the lotus mouth of the bona fide spiritual master. If you will hear from the bona fide spiritual master, you see, those words emanating from his lotus mouth, they will enter in through your ears, they will enter into your heart, and the more you go on hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, gradually your eyes will come back into focus and you will see God before you. That is how it works. So I have found such a bona fide spiritual master who has the power to do that. And he has empowered me to do that also. To give that medicine, that Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound vibration. So I want you to hear very, very clearly, very, very carefully, every single word that I'm speaking tonight. Because these words have the power to purify your heart and to purify your vision. The more you go on hearing these words that are coming from my spiritual master, I have not invented these words. This is simply the Vedic wisdom. It is coming down from Brahmaji in the disciplic succession, from Krishna himself. I am simply purely passing on these words, but I can assure you, these words that I am speaking right now, that you're hearing right now with your ears, these words, these very sound vibrations coming out of this mouth, have the power and the potency to liberate you from the cycle of birth and death, and to enable you to see God before you at every minute. Yomang pashyati sarvatra sarvang shamai pashyati tashyahang na pranashyami satchamena pranashyati. Krishna describes this in chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 30. He says like this: for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So, as you go on hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, again and again and again, drinking deep the nectarian words of Krishna coming from his mouth, gradually you will see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. You'll see him in the ashram, you'll see him on the street, you'll see him even in the grocery store, you'll see him on the freeway or the tollway here, they're not free here. Where I come from, they're free. We call them freeways. course, now they're catching up. They're introducing some tollways too. Whether I'm on the tollway or the freeway, whether I'm walking down the street, you see, if I have become enlightened with Krishna bhakti, you see, Krishna consciousness, then actually I'll be able to see Krishna everywhere and every minute. And I'll be fully surrendered unto Him, do whatever He wants me to do to please Him. You see. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. I've been speaking now for quite a while, for 35 minutes. I don't want you to get bored. In the Kali Yuga, our attention span is very short. In the previous ages, one could sit for 7 days and hear Guru speak without any interruption. For 7 days straight, they could sit and hear, you see. Here, so many people are getting up, going here, going there, you see. But in the previous Yuga, the disciple, he could sit for 7 days, not even take a drink of water, not even think about eating or sleeping. He would simply sit for 7 days and hear from the spiritual master. But I know, and this is the Kali Yuga now, you know, 35 minutes is a long time to hear a lecture. I know it. The previous 35 hours was nothing in the previous age, you see. But now, 35 minutes, that can be a little bit of an ordeal. Start getting, you know, well, when is this going to be over? But does anybody have any questions? That's actually more interesting when you ask questions. Everybody becomes more interested when there's questions. I'll be really happy to try to answer any questions. Maybe I said something you don't agree with. You think it's wrong. Maybe you feel I've misrepresented the Vedic wisdom. You see? But I can back everything I say up with scripture. I can tell you that right now. But if you feel I really am not presenting properly what's in the scripture, you tell me why and I'll show you why I'm right. Because I have studied this day in and day out for the last 38 years. For the last 38 years, every day I have studied this. That's all I've done for 38 years. I've studied this wisdom. I was previously a songwriter looking for a message which could deliver the whole world from chaos. And I couldn't figure it out. But then I found a spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who already had it figured, who already knew. So I said, why should I write songs? I'll just repeat what I'm hearing from Him. It's more powerful than any song that I could write. I'll just take what He is teaching and I'll spread it all over the world. Because this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, it will liberate everyone. This is the original song, the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, you see. I was trying to write my own song, but who can compete with God? You see, His song, Bhagavad Gita, that is the perfect song. So I've been singing this Bhagavad Gita song now for 38 years. And I tell you, the more I sing it, the sweeter it gets. You never get Bhagavad Gita, you never get tired of it. The more you go on reciting the Gita, it gets sweeter. Sweeter, sweeter. That almost rhymes with Gita. Sweeta Gita. So anyway, if there's no questions, any questions? Everybody's happy? Everyone's satisfied with what I spoke tonight? Everyone's happy with the message that I spoke? Or somebody feels upset with something I said? I hope I didn't upset anybody. I want to make everybody, okay, very good. Now you can ask it. I'm hard of hearing, so you tell him and he'll repeat it to me. You go ahead and say it, and he can repeat it.
No, you have said that God is in the formless and not free.
Form.
Okay? Now, God is supernatural power. It means Krishna is everything. So why can't we be in the form of formless?
Since you have heard that God is in form and formless. here, Krishna is the supernatural power. And the last question,
why can't he be formless?
Why can't he be formless?
Krishna does have his formless aspect. Because he's expanded himself as everything. So he does have the form. Formlessness is part of his nature. That's a fact. But that formlessness is coming from his form. Formlessness means that expanded everywhere. That's the formless. That is Krishna's aura. That is the shining effulgence emanating from his body. You see. So that formlessness is there, but that is, Krishna says, actually Krishna has answered your question. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 27, he says, Brahmano pratishtaham. He says, I am the source of that formlessness. It is emanating from me. So yeah, we accept the formlessness. But Krishna says, that is my emanation. That is actually the aura coming from his body. So we accept it. And that to realize or merge in that formlessness, it is a bona fide type of realization. It is called Brahman realization. And that is called perfect realization, Brahman realization. But then the Vedas describe there's another type of realization called Paramatma realization. When one realizes the four-armed form of Vishnu within the heart, that realization is called more perfect. And there's a third type of realization called Bhagavan realization, where one realizes Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of the Paramatma and the source of the impersonal Brahman effulgence. That is called most perfect realization. So to realize Brahman, that impersonal formlessness, that is called perfect realization. But there is perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. This is described. So we don't negate that. It is a very good beginning point. I was also a student of that formless aspect of God in the beginning. I was on that path of impersonalism, you see. Neti, I want to deny all the dualities of material existence. Just deny, neti. Just chop away everything, you see, and have nothing left. That's the idea. So I was chopping. Not this, not that. Deny this, deny that. Deny. You know what happened? I got to the point, said, well, I've denied everything, and now what is there left for me to deny? And I realized now there's one more thing to deny, and that's denial itself. I've denied everything, neti. Now there's one more thing to deny, and that is denial. You see, I've taken my hatchet and I've chopped down all the material dualities. I've chopped it with my neti hatchet. I've chopped away all material dualities. Completely negated all of them, but I still got the hatchet in my hand. The neti hatchet. Now throw away the hatchet. That's the last thing. So, I denied all material dualities to get some feeling of merging into that formlessness. I came to that step, you see. But then I had to deny denial. And then I said, in fact, I wrote it down one night when I had this realization. I said, I denied and I denied until I could deny no longer, and then I had to start accepting. What will you accept when you've denied all material dualities to realize that formless nature? Then what will come next? Then there has to be a transcendental nature, a transcendental form, you see. That's what comes. And it's described in the Sri Yushupanishad. The devotee prays there. He says, my dear Lord, this is the devotee who's realized the formlessness, you see. He's seeing it as a white light. He's realized, a devotee who's realized the formlessness as the bright, brilliant white light. What does he pray? He says, my dear Lord, please remove that white light so that I can see your form of bliss. So that white light is like a curtain. And if you go, if you, and there are great sages who realize that formlessness. You may have heard of Sanat Kumara. This is Sanat Kumara Das, my disciple. He's not the original Sanat Kumara, but he's the servant of Sanat Kumara. This Sanat Kumara, along with his brothers, they are felt. You may have heard of the four Kumaras. They are great transcendentalists. They were sons of Brahmaji. Brahmaji wanted them. Brahmaji's duty was to populate the universe. So Brahmaji ordered these four boys that you must have children. And they said, no way. We want to be sadhus. They kept themselves as little boys so they would never reach puberty, so they would never feel any sex desire, you see. Brahmaji became so angry. From his anger, Shiva was born from his forehead. That's how Shiva was born. And Brahmaji got angry when the four Kumaras refused to propagate, remain as little boys, that his anger manifested as Shiva from the forehead. And that's where Shiva came out. So anyway, those four Kumaras, they were realized in the formlessness. But they had it by some arrangement, they smelled the incense and the tulsi leaves which had been offered to Krishna. They smelled that. By the aroma, they got a higher realization. They went beyond the formlessness and they realized the form of God, you see. The same thing with Shukadeva Goswami, the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was the son of Vedavyas. He was in the womb of his mother and he was perfectly realized in the formlessness. And he thought, well, I don't want to be, you know, here I am realized in the perfectly realized in formlessness and I better stay in the womb. If I come out, I may fall into Maya. They may want to give me a wife. I'll have to get a job, you know. I'll fall into Maya. So he decided, I will stay in the womb of my mother. So he was a 16-year-old boy. Can you imagine the poor mother? She had a 16-year-old boy in her womb. But he stayed for 16 years in the womb of his mother. Afraid to come out because he didn't want to lose his realization of the formlessness. But then he heard his father, Vedavyas, reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, describing the transcendental form of the Supreme Person. And he went, wow, that's great. I can come out now and just be a devotee. But he was still a little nervous that they might want to get him married and so many things, you know, like most parents do, right? They want to get the kids married. So he said, I'm not taking any chances. When he came out of the womb, immediately took off running. He didn't even wait to get any clothes. He immediately took off running across India. He became one of the original Nagababas. He went running. And his father, Vedavyas, went running after him. My dear boy, come home. We love you. We love you. Please come back. But he went running. And finally he came to where Parikshit Maharaj was preparing for death, the great emperor of India. And all the sages said he has the greatest realization because he has realized the personality of Godhead. So let him give spiritual knowledge to Parikshit Maharaj. And that is the Srimad Bhagavatam, you see. He was realized in formlessness. But then when he heard from Vedavyas the transcendental form of the Supreme, not a material form, but transcendental form means it includes everything within it. In other words, Krishna's form is so amazing that he can be, he's everywhere, and at the same time he's localized. He can be sitting with his queen in the Dwarka Palace, and at the same time be everywhere, both at the same time. See, with your form, you cannot do that. You can be in one place at one time. But Bhagavan or Krishna or Vishnu, he can be in one place doing one thing and be everywhere at the same time. So he has a form, but that form is not limited like your form or my form. That form is absolutely unlimited. Now if we say that God cannot have a form, what are we doing? We are limiting God. So we cannot say that God cannot have a form. You see, God can have a form and not have a form both at the same time. That is God. Yes. So is that clear? Yes. Very good. Thank you so much. That was an excellent question. I very much appreciate your question. Thank you so much for that. Hare Krishna. So, any other questions? So everybody's happy now. Are all the boys happy? These young boys? Are they happy? Yes? Very good. You little girls are happy? Huh? You're happy? Huh? Are you happy? Yes? Very good. We want all the children to be happy, you see. Therefore, we should not let them rot their brains with these stupid cartoons on the TV, you see. We should let them hear the Vedic wisdom. Because we've seen, if you train the child to hear Vedic wisdom, the child can enjoy anything, you see. For him, everything is amazing. A little child comes out, the whole world is amazing. A butterfly is amazing. A lecture on Bhagavad Gita philosophy, it is also amazing. So don't think, oh, they're little children, this is only for adults. No, let the children come, sit them in your lap, let them hear this knowledge. And they will learn to relish it like anything. We've seen that in our ashram in Austin. One of my disciples, Abhay Charan Das, my good wife, Vishnupriya Devi Dashi, she trained Abhay Charan how to train his child. And this little boy at the age of 3, he was preaching philosophy and quoting shlokas to back up his philosophical point. He wasn't just reciting verses for some festival, you know, but he was doing it to make philosophical points. So, at the age of 3, that's because he didn't watch television. He simply sat, and he came to the temple every time and sat with his father and heard the lectures. He took this knowledge in, and it purified his consciousness. And even without any endeavor, he was memorizing verses. If we adults want to memorize a verse, we have to spend 20 minutes, or, you know, 20 hours repeating it again and again, looking at the book, saying it, looking at the book. How much endeavor for an adult to learn even one shloka? But this little boy, without even exercising his brain, just by sitting and hearing the class, he was memorizing the verses. You see. He could verbatim, he could report the verses, repeat the verses. So these children should be given this opportunity to hear from the bona fide spiritual master again and again and again and again and again and again as a regular daily affair. That's what's stated in the Bhagavatam. Nashta praeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavad yuttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. By regularly hearing classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service to that person who is a living embodiment of the Srimad Bhagavatam. All that is inauspicious within the heart becomes destroyed almost anew, and thus loving service unto that transcendent Lord who is praised with transcendental hymns becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So if there's no more questions, we can stop here. And we thank you so much for so nicely receiving us. I was very moved by your wonderful reception. Such nice flowers you have given me. This is one of the opulences of Malaysia. Such wonderful, wonderful flowers you have here. You're very blessed here to have such natural beauty. You can engage in the service of God. Thank you all very much. Lord Sri Krishna ki jai. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.